So, a little preparation, a little background for where we are in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I looked ahead a little bit, and there's many pages, many pages coming up, still focusing on this one verse that verse that's glorifying the cowherd boys of Krita Punya Punja, how fortunate they are. And some of the verses we're going to read, they're all focused on that verse. It's 10, 12, 11. So it's a good one to become familiar with, because it's a celebrated verse. Prabhupada spoke about it often, and now I'm seeing why. Their acharya is speaking about it often. It's not just the good fortune of the cowherd boys, but it's the super excellent position of the devotees in Vraja. Because the earlier parts of that verse make comparisons to the cowherd boys, to the gyanis, to dasya bhaktas, and to the materialists. And the position of the cowherd boys or the brijbasis, it's superlative. Nothing can, even pure devotees, dasya bhaktas is the term that's used in the verse. They worship the Supreme Lord. The cowherd boys play with him. The intimacy, the sweetness, the love that they have for him, and then reciprocally the love that he has for them, it can't be compared to anything. So that's an important message in the 10th canto. And because that verse specifically, it's verses 7 through 11, 7 through 10 describe what the cowherd boys do when they go in the forest. And then 11 is how exalted they are. It's kind of like an ecstatic expression of Shukadeva Goswami narrating to Maharaj Prakshit, and recognizing Maharaj Prakshit is also quite astonished. They're experiencing ecstasy describing the cowherd boys and hearing about the cowherd boys, Shravanam Kirtanam. For one who hears and one who speaks or recites, it brings stimulation of ecstatic love, and these residents of Vrindavan are in that position. It's a way of attaining the position by recognizing, appreciating, esteeming, revering, and meditating upon and becoming followers of. It's Raghunuga Bhakti. And for sadhakas, it's not Raghunuga Bhakti. But for the Raghunuga Bhaktas, it's Raghunuga Bhakti. It's something they derive some special relish from. So there's this evening, there's three sections. It's from different parts of the 10th canto. And it's all going to focus on, this verse is a pivot part, but it's focusing on the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan. The first one is glorifying Mother Jasoda. It's going back to Vatsalya Rasa. Of those who have Vatsalya Rasa, she's the superlative. So, the end of chapter 8, which comes before chapter 9, and at the end of chapter 8, and chapter 9 is the Damodar Leela. And at the beginning of chapter 9, there's a course correction. Shukadeva Goswami is narrating, and he then shifts into the overdrive. He goes into the position of Mother Yashoda is eternally perfect, because the end of chapter 8 was describing the childhood pastimes of Krishna, and Sukadeva Goswami is saying she's so exalted. She and Nanda are so exalted that their position is more fortunate even than mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, because they enjoyed the childhood pastimes of Krishna very intimately, very closely. And the response Maharaj Parikshit gives is, how did they attain, what did they do to attain that kind of love? And then there's this little interlude. I'm making reference to because it's in the commentary, that Drona and Dara are partial expansions of Vasudeva, of Nanda and Yashoda, ordered by the Supreme Lord, situated in the spiritual, in the heavenly realm. They approached Brahma. We'd like to have a child. We're childless. We want the personality of Godhead as our son. He smiled and he said, you can enter the earthly realm. Krishna will soon appear. So they merged into the bodies of Nanda and Yashoda. At the end of Krishna's pastimes, they returned to their position in the spiritual, in the heavenly realm. So the end of chapter 8 is Drona and Dara. But the unique position of Mother Yashoda is that she's even beyond the Vedas. The Vedas describe the Supreme Lord in different, this way, this way, this way, sequentially, hierarchical ways, and she's beyond that. She's just playing with her son. She's intimately, affectionately mothering her son. She's beyond the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. She's beyond the purpose of the Vedas. It's the superlative position. So that's, then the cowherd boys are also in that superlative position. Meaning, or the inference is, the residents of Braja, their love is unique. So that's, 10th canto wants us to understand that from different angles of vision. So that's what we're doing. So this is, starts with, it's Jiva Goswami commenting on Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 45, the glorification, 10.8.45, which is glorifying Yashoda. The glories of the Supreme Lord are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literatures of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature, yet Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person an ordinary child. Commentary, Jiva Goswami. Okay. Yashoda is supremely fortunate. The Lord is praised in these three Vedas, ultimately, as the Antaryami of karma and upasana. He is praised in the Upanishads as the greatest, or Brahman, by qualities and swarup. He is praised in the theistic Sankhya and the Puranas as Bhagavan. He is praised in the Pancharatra Agama scriptures, Satvatai, which are filled with worship of the Lord. The Agamas as well as the Puranas are included in this list because they are accepted as Angas of the Vedas. The Lord is glorified to some extent, Upa, in these works, since the Lord is actually unlimited. Yashoda considered the Lord to be her son, caring for him affectionately as a mother. This is greatly astonishing. That's a commentary on the different parts of the Vedas have different perspectives about God or the Supreme. And she's beyond the Vedas. The following should be considered. Her greatness was not because of seeing the universe. This vision of the universe is rejected in the second canto as follows, 2.2.14. As long as meditation on the Lord, this is a translation of a verse, second canto, chapter 2. As long as meditation on the Lord and the witness of all beings, superior to even Brahma, which has bhakti as an element, does not manifest, one should remember the gross universal form after performing necessary rites of karma yoga. And in earlier chapter, 2.1.39, the yogi, so you remember the sequence, the end of chapter, the end of canto 1, Maharaj Parikshit asks two questions. What's the duty of a person who's about to die, and what subject matter should they hear, chant, and remember always? That's the canto closes, canto 2 opens with universal form. So universal form is described in chapter 1. Then chapter 2 shifts to Paramatma, or the Antaryami. So it's this Antaryami, because that was mentioned above, if one isn't at that stage of meditation upon Supersoul, then one is supposed to meditate on this universal form after performing necessary rites of karma yoga. There must be appropriate detachment to have to get real benefit from meditation on the universal form. So, but chapter 1, universal form, says, the yogi will worship the Lord and ocean of bliss, eternal in time and space, and nothing else, since other things will cause degradation. That is to say, meditation on the universal form causes gradual elevation, and that is to be abandoned when one comes to the Paramatma meditation, which is to be abandoned when one comes or matures into devotional service. That's the sequence of those chapters. So, her greatness is not seeing the universal form, because that's not the real greatness of Yashoda. Nor does seeing the universe produce knowledge of the Supreme Lord as Krishna. Of course, she said that her child may have astonishing powers. She then defined the Lord, who cannot be understood. Then she stated that she thought of Krishna as her son, just as she thought of Nanda as her husband, because of Maya. This does not mean that she saw Krishna as the Lord, for otherwise she would have praised him as Devaki did. This comparison is made. When Vasudeva and Devaki saw Krishna in the prison house, they offered their prayers. And Yashoda never offered prayers. She never saw him as the Supreme Lord and offered him prayers. She and her husband worshipped Narayan. She didn't see him as Narayan. They worshipped Narayan and offered prayers. She didn't see him that way. The meaning of this episode is not that seeing Krishna as the Lord is superior and seeing him as her son is inferior, since that meaning cannot be found in any of the verses. This meaning would also not agree with later questions and answers in the text. Paragraph. Parikshit, after hearing the chapter 8 description of Mother Jasoda's position, etc., etc., seeing the universal form in her mouth and how she responded, Parikshit praises her for rejecting knowledge of Krishna as the Lord and instead worrying about his protection and feeding Krishna milk. Parikshit laments for Vasudeva and Devaki, who, though knowing Krishna as the Lord, did not have affection for him as their son. The most knowledgeable of poets, such as Vyasadeva, also state that Yashoda's realization of Krishna as her son was the highest. And it gives some examples from chapter 9. Chapter 9 is the Damodar Lila. Shukadeva establishes Yashoda and Nanda as superior to Brahma and Shiva, although they have great devotion and all knowledge. They are even superior to Lakshmi, that's Nanda and Yashoda, that's text 20. The first 21 verses of chapter 9 are all on the same theme. Nanda and Yashoda are at the top. They're the topmost. And 21 is concluding it. We're going to hear 21 after this section. But so, 20 says they are superior even to Nanda, to Lakshmi. Those ordinary people who worship Krishna as the son of Yashoda are superior to all the Gyanis. Text 21 of chapter 9. So if the worshippers of Nanda and Yashoda, that means, you know, that they see them as ragatmikas, and they're the Raghunuga Bhakti stage, and they're just meditating upon and worshipping the perfected Nanda and Yashoda. And they, empowered by Krishna, can deliver their worshippers. That's described elsewhere. Krishna is the deliverer, but Krishna can deliver through his exalted devotees. So they're more exalted than the Gyanis, etc. Which is what is said in this chapter 12 that we're reading. You'll hear shortly. Elsewhere, the superiority of this love is mentioned. This is now Canto 5. Chapter 6. What's Canto 5, Chapter 6? Canto 5, Chapter 6 is Rishabhdev. Rishabhdev is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And Rishabhdev is instructing his sons, the 100 sons headed by Bharat. That's in Chapter 5. And now he's continuing in Chapter 6. So the narrator of that is Shukadev. So Shukadev is now speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. Canto 5, Chapter 6, where he says to Shukadev, my dear king, the Supreme Person Mukunda is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. In this way, so here's now our verse, chapter 12, text 11. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him. Though he is pure consciousness or happiness, known as Brahman for the Gyanis, the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. Last sentence, if this is so for the general devotees, then what to speak of those like Yashoda and Nanda? Thus, the conclusion stated becomes even stronger. So the conclusion is the Brijvasis are out of sight. They're beyond anything the Vedas can deliver, the majority of the Vedas. So the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the Vedas in delivering this very special understanding. The residents of Vrindavan and their love for Krishna. So our acharyas don't tire. they get enlivenment describing, and they do it very sweetly in all kinds of variegated ways. So next is Jiva Goswami's commentary on 10.9.21. 10.9.21 is, again, it's the concluding verse of the Damodar Leela glorification of... The Leela hasn't begun yet. It's just describing Yasoda's love. 21 verses. So the conclusion is... The Lord, the son of Yashoda, is not easily available to materialists or to jnanis with realization of Atma, but is easily available to persons with devotion to the son of Yashoda. Question: how did Yashoda attain her position? That was asked at the end of chapter 8. Or towards the end of chapter 8, and when the Drona and Dara topic is presented. How can others attain such a position? The Lord, the son of Yashoda, is not easily attained by austerities or any other means by people who identify themselves as possessors of the body, dehi nam. If there is association with devotees, somehow at some time, then gradually a person will attain this. Now the quote, Jiva Goswami is quoting Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, Change of Heart. Quote, auspiciousness arises for the worshippers of devatas if firm devotion for the Lord arises from the association of devotees. You know, that series of verses that speaks, if you want this, then you worship this deva. If you want that, you worship the other deva, and so forth. But those who want nothing, they worship the personality of Godhead. Then he circles back and says, if one gets the association of devotees, even the worshippers of the devas can come to the position of auspiciousness. Jnanis, who know they are not the body and realize they are Atma, Jnaninam Chatma Bhutanam, cannot easily attain such a position, but they can if they have association of devotees. Who easily attains that position? The son of Yashoda is attained easily by those dedicated to Krishna, Iha, to him. To those who have devotion for Mahanarayana, they are excluded. It is reasonable that the devotees of Narayana do not attain such a position. That is, their Aishwarya is so strong, the Madhurya doesn't fit. So they can't attain the position that the Vrijbhasis attain. That's the Dasyabhav. From the cowherd boy verse of chapter 12. Paragraph. Since those who identify with the body and the jnanis seeing Krishna as a material body do not respect him, and those who worship Narayan seeing his pastimes as a cowherd, even though they do not see him as a material entity, do not respect him, it is appropriate that devotees of Krishna alone attain such a position of bhakti, for only those devotees realize Krishna's pastimes as the highest. Then here's the verse, 10, 12, 11. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, though he is pure consciousness, or happiness known as Brahman for the jnanis, the Supreme Lord for those devotees with Dasya Bhav, and an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. Yashoda is addressed as Gopika Sutta. The word Gopika Sutta is not a secondary descriptive element, since it indicates that the highest position was given to Yashoda, the cowherd woman. The word Iha to him indicates to Krishna, son of Yashoda, since only such devotees attain such a position. Iha, meaning in the world, would be without function in this sentence. So it's a grammatical evaluation. It has to mean to Krishna in Vrindavan. It can't mean this other. Because there's a Sanskrit rule. There's lots of Sanskrit rules. One of the Sanskrit rules is a direct meaning must be taken. Unless it, in a particular circumstance, it just doesn't work. And then you have to make some secondary meaning. So that's what he's just following, the Sanskrit rule. I hope it's clear. The word bhakti matam, or persons having bhakti, is used to indicate, without distinction, a succession of devotees in past, present, and future, since the Vedas teach bhakti and the parampara of teacher and student extends without beginning in the past and ultimately and unlimitedly into the future. The special characteristic of the son of Yashoda is that in both states, sadhana and sadhya, or prema, he gives happiness. Therefore, devotees of Krishna spread over all time, they concentrate on the Lord as the son of Yashoda, as their sadhana, and attain him, sadhya. He remains in that form eternally. He is perfect in that form. Accepting Krishna as the son of Yashoda is a sadhana. However, this is not a sadhana for Yashoda, since if she performed such sadhana, there would be the fault of having to worship herself. Pretty logical. There is no question of Yashoda, quote, attaining a position of happiness. For Krishna is the son of Yashoda. As well as Yashoda, Nanda, and others are also included in various mantras used during Janmashtami Vrata and in Avarana Puja, or worship of associates of the main deity during Archana. That's a section of the Vedas called the Agamas describe procedures for worship. And the Agamas are followed by the Sri Sampradaya and the Bhadra Sampradaya. And the Pancharatrika system, Narada Pancharatra, is part of that section. And that's primarily what Lord Chaitanya's followers adhere to. Narada Pancharatra and that Pancharatrika section of the Agamas. And the Agamas are part of the Vedas. So it's part of the Vedas. Is part of that Agama section, that when you worship your main deity, you may also have mantras that are worshiping deities related to the main deity. I'll give an example. I learned something about, I'm not really a deity worship scholar by any means, but a question came up that said, why in Udupi do we find just Udupi Krishna? And there isn't a goddess of fortune by his side. And so I raised this question to our deity worship minister, who wanted to check on it. So he checked with somebody that's from South India, one of the deity worship ministry scholarly devotees. And he wanted to make sure he got it right, so he checked with a Sri Vaishnava pundit who gave him the answer I just gave you. He said, we do worship Lakshmi when you see forms that Sri Vaishnavas worship and forms that the Madhvas worship. They're very small forms of the goddess of fortune. Shri and Bhu, commonly. And he said that deity is a deity, doesn't matter the size. And there are mantras that go along with the worship of Shri and Bhu, and sometimes they're on the chest of the Lord. And the Agamas teach that sometimes there's in Sri Vaishnav temples, we'll see Lakshmi is over there. And it's not like they're just worshiping Lakshmi. That's not their sampradaya. It's not just because it's the Sri Sampradaya, they worship Lakshmi. It's just part of what the Agamas say. She is worshipped in this way as part of worship Narayan. It's just what the Agamas say, so they do what the Agamas say. So that's what's being said here. In various mantras used during Janmashtami Vrata and Avarana Puja, worship of the associates of the main deity during Archana, their names are mentioned. Thus, previously when Shukadeva Goswami, when he was asked by Maharaj Pariksit, how did Yasoda and Nand attain their position? He spoke of Drona and Dara. So the concluding message is, thus, previously when I mentioned Drona and Dara doing sadhana as expansions of Nanda and Yasoda, it was only a pastime in order to awaken your eagerness, which he corrected in chapter 9. So what's an important part of what's being said here, there's lots of things, but an important part is Nanda and Yasoda is not a post. And then there's a rotation of persons at different times. They're eternally Nanda Yasoda. You can't become Nanda Yasoda. You can become an assistant or a follower of, and that's, you know, plenty of room available in the spiritual world for assistance of Nanda Yasoda. But it's not a post. You can't do something to attain that post. And the second is their position is superlative. Amongst those that have vatsalya bhava, parental affection, they're superlative. That's the main message, and with many other things to embellish how that is so and why that is so and how it's justified to say that. Next, we're going to go to Canto 10, Chapter 13. Chapter 13 comes after Chapter 12. And in Chapter 12, which is what we're reading, it's Agasura is killed, then the coward boys go to have lunch. First they're playing. Then they encounter Agasura. Agasura is killed. They go to have lunch. Brahma wants to see the limit of Krishna's power, so he kidnaps the cowherd boys and calves and puts them in a cave, and he comes back and he sees what he sees. And he's overwhelmed. So at the beginning of chapter 13, is Maharaj Pariksit saying, what happened during that whole year that the calves and the cowherd boys were in the cave? And then at the end, because it ends up, you know, Brahma comes back and they're having lunch. So what happened during that 1 year? And then 13 begins explaining what happened during that 1 year. Krishna expanded himself as each of the calves encountered boys, and to give satisfaction to the mothers of the boys and the cows, to have Krishna as their son or Krishna as their calf. He fulfilled their desire. And Baladev, it's important, from the beginning of chapter 12, Baladev didn't go out that day. Baladev, there's different explanations of why he didn't go, but in short, he didn't go when Krishna went that morning to have picnic and so forth, and the Yagasura, because Krishna didn't expand himself as Baladev. Baladev wasn't there. And we heard, Krishna covered Baladev with his Yogamaya potency, so for a whole year, he didn't know what was going on. It was just the cowherd boys. But he was feeling affection for the cowherd boys like he feels for Krishna. He was a little puzzled like the mothers were. But he didn't, he was still covered by Yogamaya. He didn't get it. And when chapter 13 begins, Krishna starts to slowly pull back the Yogamaya curtain, and he gets it. Whoa, these aren't just cowherd boys. These aren't just calves. It's Krishna. So here, that's what, where we are. 10.13.39, Baladev said, O Supreme Controller, these boys are not great demigods, as I previously thought, nor are these calves great sages, like Narada. Now I can see that you alone are manifesting yourself in all varieties of difference. Although one, you exist in different forms of calves and boys. Please briefly explain this to me. And the verse concludes, having been thus requested by Lord Baladev, Krishna explained the whole situation, and Baladev understood it. So we're going to go back to our Krita Punya Punja verse, but here's Jiva Goswami's commentary to get us there. These are not the best of devatas, like Garuda. They are not sages, like Narada. Though they take shelter of various forms, Krishna alone existed, since Balaram realized they were all one, caused by the bliss of Krishna Swarup. This verse rejects the speculation offered in verse 37. Verse 37, Brahma is just kind of like, hey, wait a minute, maybe this, maybe that. But this is now, no, it's not maybe this, maybe that. Here's what it is. They are not devatas or sages. The sages did not make the boys and calves disappear and take their places, since they could not be the shelter of such prema. They did not accumulate abundant pious acts, as expressed in verse 10, 12, 11, put Krita Punya Punja. Denial of demons is also not mentioned in this verse because of abridgment. Though you are one, you exist in with variety, pratak. Pratak is an important word in various places in the Bhagavatam. I'll mention one place, it's very prominent. In Kapila Dev's teachings, Devahuti is asking about bhakti. And she says, bhakti is pure, but what if our consciousness is not pure? Can bhakti be influenced by impure consciousness, by the modes of nature? And he says, yes, bhakti is pure, but one's consciousness in bhakti may not be pure. And he uses the word pratak, And Prabhupada translates it as separatist. In the mode of ignorance, one is a separatist. In the mode of passion, one is a separatist. In the mode of goodness, one is aspiring to become pure. And then there's pure consciousness. So pratak is a strong word. Here it is. Though you are one, you exist with variety. That's the higher sense of pratak. You are all the calves and boys, sarvam. Explain briefly how this has happened. Out of affection, Balaram does not want Krishna to get tired by speaking elaborately. Krishna, the Lord, Prabhuna of Balaram, explained everything. And Balaram understood, since he was capable of everything, confirmed from the name-giving ceremony of Balaram, chapter 8 of canto 10, Bala diad balam viduhu. Because of his great ability, he'll be known as Bala. It should be understood that by the mercy of Krishna, he understood, he was ignorant for a long time by the desire of Krishna for carrying out the pastime. Krishna also worried that Balaram, most merciful and soft, would not be able to tolerate the condition of the boys put to sleep by Brahma. So what's that about? For 1 year, Krishna is manifesting himself as cowherd boys and calves, and then there's the cowherd boys and calves. And they must have gotten hungry. And they're off in a cave. And they're without Krishna, who they couldn't tolerate being without for even a moment. So for a whole year, they're without Krishna, and they didn't eat, and they're in a cave. So Balaram couldn't have been able to tolerate that, because he's as affectionate for the calves and the boys as Krishna is affectionate for the calves and the boys. So he was covered for a variety of reasons, so he could conduct the pastime of giving his association to the mothers and to the cows. So Balaram was covered, didn't even know what was going on. Now, fortunately, we can't become Krishna. We probably make a big mess of things. But Krishna has all potencies unlimited, and they're working smoothly, flawlessly, and precisely. So those so many potencies. There's, you know, the material ones, and then there's the spiritual ones. And the material ones are the counterpart of the spiritual ones, and they're all moving on the strength of one thing, and that's Krishna's desire potency. It's really quite amazing. You know, that remote control. I was, maybe 10 years ago or something like that, I was in a neighborhood going for a walk, and I saw a car, you know, a little miniature toy car, going, making some noise and coming to a sharp halt, and then making a right angle turn and going this way, and then going in reverse, and there was a little boy watching this car, and over there was a boy laughing because he had one of the remote control devices. And then his father came out, and the little boy was bewildered, so he walked over to the little boy and he explained to him how it was happening. But the boy that just saw it for the first time, it was like, So the material creation is going on by remote control. He doesn't have to lift a pinky. I mean, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, but he didn't have to even lift it with his pinky. He could have just willed it to float. His energies do everything. But he held the mountain so that everyone could see him for 7 days or seven nights, and the cowherd boys could ask him, so we can massage your arm, maybe you can try the other arm, so we can massage your left arm, must be getting tired, and so forth. It's just, so he's curbing the pride, he's doing so many things with any action. Curbing the pride of Indra, giving protection to the residents of Braja, giving his loving exchange to all the devotees. Determining the kinds of acts you have to do if you're going to say that you're God. He never said he was God. But can you lift Govardhan Hill? Can you swallow a forest fire? Can you show the universal form? He shows his divinity for multiple reasons. To increase the astonishment, that's a secondary rasa, by the way, to enhance the love by showing his astonishing features. And yet, the love of the residents of Vrindavan is so strong. They, even when they see it, we're going to be hearing about it tomorrow morning, when they see his divinity, they pause a little bit, they process it, and they get overwhelmed again. You know, they relegate it to something over there because they're sweet, that the intensity of their love is so strong. They're not ignorant. They just, their love, they're in the topmost position of knowing Krishna. Because to know Krishna, our teaching is through bhakti. You can know Krishna. It's not by studying books and all those things. I mean, we study books not to know Krishna by gyan. We study to nourish our bhakti. That's why we study. And give us subject matter to hear, chant, remember. That's why we study, because that's our bhakti process, shravanam, kirtanam. But as through, they have the topmost level of bhakti. We can understand that from reading books. We're not there, but we can understand their superlative position. And that's what's being offered in this 10th canto, and that's one of the reasons why it's recommended before 10th canto, the other cantos. But even our acharyas are very kindly giving us very, very clear explanation of why it's important to understand the exaltedness of Krishna's pastimes. And it's not, you know, mythology or something. It's the exhibition of his potencies to stimulate the love of his devotees. And that's what Krishna does. He's just having a good time. He's enjoying in the company of his loving associates while he's accomplishing many things simultaneously. The remote control of the material world. He does through agencies of others, his expansions, Paramatma expansion. He's the one holding the gizmo. He's the one that makes the gizmo that moves on remote control. And how do you fit it into your mind? You know, what's the extent of Krishna? And it's quite overwhelming. That's good. It's good to be overwhelmed in the contemplation of that which is unlimited and inconceivable. And the Bhagavatam is presenting us all of that. And, you know, we're just little people off in some corner of the universe trying to understand about Krishna through hearing about him, remembering him, chanting his glories, trying to become pure in our mood of service to him. It's a nice process. Along with everything else that we do in practical activities of life. But the practical, we were discussing this at length, the practical activities of life, they're important. And they're secondary. And the secondary follows behind the primary. If you don't have the primary, then they're not just secondary. They fall in another category. Useless. Or captured by the deluding potency. It doesn't have to be that way. We don't have to abandon our secondary. We do them. Stanes to tuk shutigatam tanavan manobir. That's our life. So let's see if there's some discussion. And my apology for being a little late. I was going through this evening's verses and I just got so absorbed I lost track of time. So if there's some questions in the room, that's very good because it gives time for the people that are online to send in a question. So if anyone would like to raise a question, please go right ahead. Okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is regarding the 2 days back, 13 Bhagavad Gita, 13 chapter 8 to 12 verse. So just a follow-up of that.
Okay, that discussion.
That discussion. So in that discussion, the two practical things or two things you were suggesting of chanting as a service and also doing some devotional service for someone. So last couple of days I was trying to do things. One thing I was just observing was like, when I'm trying to do, I'm also receiving, so I was just feeling that happiness, I felt some happiness. Also there is some expectation also, so again I was just thinking it is again me, it is nothing towards them.
It's a mix, it's not...
Yeah, so when those type of, when I'm receiving it, like when I'm trying to do the service or anything, I'm also feeling that reciprocation. So how do I, instead of going into this, like again the pride
the
and
cycle,
all,
yeah.
In the cycle, like how do I?
Well, the very fact that you're having the thought that you're expressing or the feeling that you're expressing, that's part of what you're to do. You know, it's you do a course correction. And it's gradual. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like the metaphor that's used sometimes is moving the direction of a ship. You can't just like zip it over there. It takes some time because it's a big thing. Mm-hmm. So our life has been moving, you know, quite successfully in selfishness, mm-hmm. Or, you know, steadily, they say, not successfully, steadily. And so the course correction takes some time. So you do just some course correction. Don't beat yourself up or admonish yourself or something. It's just, this is the residual tendency. And the good news is, Krishna will correct that. Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 10, text 11. Krishna does it. But Krishna won't interfere. Krishna will do it when we want. That's the bhakti element. So it's the bhakti element that is for Krishna, and that's the happiness, and then comes the pride. Or it's about me, you know, what I'm feeling. So, it's not wrong to feel happiness. But the happiness that we're, the object of love is being forgotten, That's illusion. That kind of happiness is illusory happiness. And it pulls us down into illusion. And all the other things that go on with the life of illusion. So it's, you do the course correction program. You recognize, when you recognize, I'm at the center again. You hit the reset button. You pause. You go, actually, it's Krishna's kindness to teach me I'm still attached to my happiness. So let me again consider. And so the bhakti muscle gets exercised. And as the bhakti muscle gets exercised, I'm using that physical therapy example or metaphor, that it just becomes your natural life because bhakti is stronger. And bhakti means for Krishna's pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Can you remove your mask? It'll make it easier to hear. Yeah. Just until while you're speaking.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is regarding one of the verses in 14th chapter. That is, who performs bhakti yoga, they can transcend the material nature. That, and they will attain Brahma Bhuta stage. That is, Mamchayo Avyabhicharena,
yes.
Bhakti Yogena Sevata. In that verse mentioned Brahma Bhuta stage, is it the like Brahman realization?
Yes.
Okay. Then, sir, who performs bhakti yogi, they will get Brahman realization.
No.
Is it?
No, the other way around.
Yes.
What the verse says, it's two parts. The verse says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. That's a symptom. The first symptom, Prasanatma. Na sochati na kangsati. Three symptoms. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. Mad bhaktim labhate param. That's the mature stage of Brahma Bhuta. Brahma Bhuta is preliminary. Not Brahma Bhuta comes after the bhakti. So Brahma Bhuta, there's degrees of recognizing your spirit soul. You know, surveys in year 2000, some 80-something percent of Americans accept that there's a soul. They don't live their life that way. So we're also devotees, we accept that we're soul, but is that a realization? Prasanatma, na sochati, na kangsati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu. No. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu. No, na sochati, na kangsati. So there's degrees. But as that those degrees mature, it's the preliminary. I'm just speaking how Prabhupada lectures on that verse. It's preliminary, Brahma Bhuta. I'm aham brahmasmi. I'm not the body. You know, chapter 2, realized. Prasanatma, it's a symptom. So, mad bhaktim labhate param. That then one achieves bhakti. So bhakti is something high. Bhakti is not just checking the box on your bhakti shastri exam and say, yes, I'm not this body and I'm a card carrying, I'm not this body person. I believe I'm not this body. But it's beyond that. It's realization. So there's degrees of realization. And similarly, there's degrees of bhakti. We don't exactly, when Prabhupada speaks on that verse, from experience, lots of times he would speak on that verse because it's an important verse. It's the Brahma Bhuta is preliminary, aham brahmasmi. And there's degrees of that understanding, realization, and there's degrees of bhakti also. So we're doing bhakti. Well, wait a minute. Do we have the preliminary? Brahma Bhuta, Prasanatma, na sochati na kangsati samaksarvesha bhuteshu. What happened to all that? The preliminary. So we're doing the elevator method. You know that one. We just get in the elevator, press the button, then go to the top floor. Get out, okay, top floor. Well, I'm not qualified. So we have to, sadhana is to become qualified, to have that Brahma-Bhuta realization, and then the other. So it's a special dispensation that we can engage in bhakti pranto, just by association with sadhus and do with sadhus what sadhus do, bhajana kriya. We're engaged in bhakti, and we don't have the Brahma-Bhuta stage down yet. So that's our subjective experience, but we can't really be, say it in reverse, we're not really doing bhakti until we're realizing who we are. It sounds contradictory.
Yes, Maharaj, always those two verses, it is contradictory. In first verse it says like, Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevita sagunam samatitaita brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So who is performing continuation devotional service, they will transcendent three modes, then they will attain brahma bhuta stage. So performing bhakti, it will give brahma bhuta stage. And in 18th chapter, brahma bhuta prasannatma na shochati kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu
mahi. I know the verse, I'm very familiar.
Yeah, I'm sorry. sorry, Maharaj. So, in that, both it looks like contradictory for me.
How to reconcile apparent contradictions? Put that one in a parking lot for a moment. Just pause button. How do you resolve apparent contradictions? What's the method for that you and I should be? What are our acharyas advise us to resolve apparent contradictions? I'm asking.
I'm not sure.
Huh?
I'm not sure, Maharaj.
You're not sure? Well, it's good to want to know. That's part of resolution. Also, understanding there isn't a contradiction. It's just my consciousness is down here, so it looks like a contradiction. But it's not a contradiction. Krishna's not going to contradict himself. So, I need to want to know, and part of that wanting to know is to inquire. I'm just describing a general principle aside from what's in the parking lot over there. And we ask, we can hear, and, you know, our binary processor probably isn't going to get it, the mind. It's not going to, oh, I get it. Because it's not just the mind, it's the consciousness that's behind that binary processor. So, we have to hear, and we didn't get it. This is Prabhupada speaking. Then you read it again, and you don't get it, and you read it again, and you don't get it. So then we go to our acharya's commentaries to help us get it. And then a little bit of light. So that, okay, I still don't get it. So just keep going. And as consciousness becomes more elevated, we'll understand actually there's no contradiction. I can describe the principle, but it's still not going to, the full light isn't going to go in as long as consciousness is not sufficiently elevated. I'm just describing a principle because it comes up a lot. I mean, not too much, but it comes up a lot. Apparent contradiction is an apparent contradiction. And I don't have sufficient capacity. It's not intellect, it's spiritual elevation of consciousness to understand. It's okay, that's my position. Let me go for more purification and a little more light will come in. A little less darkness and cloud cover. So that's the procedure. So don't expect, you know, with an answer, okay, I got it. It's not one of those kind of things. Sorry for the preamble. It's part of the mystery of bhakti. So now I'll go to the answer. It's part of the mystery of bhakti that it's like Narottam Das Thakur saying, Golokera Premadana Harinama Sankirtana. It's from the spiritual world. And here it is in this material world. And we're chanting it. But our consciousness isn't recognizing we're in contact with the spiritual world. We're not recognizing it. And we would like to. We're not there yet. But we're in contact. We're unqualified, we're covered, we're this and that. We're not Brahma-Bhuta, we're not, you know, Avyavichari Bhakti, we're not any of those things. But we're in contact with it. It's the merciful nature of bhakti. By the merciful nature of bhakti, we're being made eligible. That's this elevator metaphor. Part of our responsibility being in the elevator, being the recipients of this mercy, is to not disrespect or give a bad reputation to Krishna or the representatives of Krishna, to be actually exhibiting the qualities and character of a Vaishnava, a recipient of the Lord's mercy. That's our responsibility. Like family members, to uphold the good name of our family, to not do, you know, dumb things because it tarnishes the name of the family. We're Vaishnavas. We're getting mercy. So it's the merciful nature of bhakti as the qualifications come to us. Of course, gradually, and so all those things in those two verses gradually come to us by the merciful nature of bhakti, which is another way of saying what I was saying. We can't understand the apparent contradiction because we don't have the adhikar to understand. Wait a minute, it says this here and says that there. Arjun does that, isn't it? Three times. You say this here and you say that there. It looks like a contradiction. It's not a contradiction. And we may read that, you know, you say this here and that there and still not get it 100 times. So be patient, because the bhakti process is helping us to become qualified. Krishna is just extending his merciful hand, touching us and inviting us to become qualified. But the bhakti principle is happening even in the sadhana stage. I'll say the same thing in a very different way. You know from Nectar Devotion what the definition of bhakti is. Anyabhilashatashunyam jnanakarmadhyanavratam anukulyena Krishna. So the first part is, what is bhakti? Anyabhilashunyam. Really? I guess I'm not doing bhakti. Jnanakarmad anavratam. Finished. Zip. Squeaky clean. That's not me. I'm a sadhaka. But so, sadhana, good news is, sadhana fits into bhaktir uttama, or uttama bhakti. Because bhakti is pure, and I'm not, but I'm engaged in bhakti. I mean, so if one follows Rupa Goswami's teachings, which is Lord Chaitanya's teachings, which is the Bhagavatam's teachings, sadhana bhakti counts as uttama bhakti. Does that help you understand the answer to your question?
Thank you, Maharaj.
It's just mercy. We're not qualified, and we're getting a lot of mercy. And we should be it's good to be aware of how much mercy we're getting, because these are very elevated qualities. And we'll get there, just stay the course of receiving descending mercy and being eager to apply it in our lives. And then all those symptoms, the Brahma-Bhuta symptoms, and mamsha yovya bhicharina bhakti yugin, all of that comes. It's the mystery of bhakti. It's the mystery of disciplic succession, which is the mystery of bhakti. Unqualified people here and there are getting a downpour of mercy and becoming, you know, a little slowly, sometimes too slowly, sometimes up and down, but, you know, becoming purified and qualified. Qualities become the decorations of one who's sincere in bhakti. And Krishna is the decorator. Okay. Good.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much for enlightening me today evening. And always, I don't have any questions. I just wanted to just say thanks. And don't expect any questions. And always, I think you are enlightening us with your teachings and your knowledge and whatever you acquired and gained. Thank you very much for that.
Should we move to online questions, Maharaj?
Or? Please. We'll go some back and forth. So those of you that haven't spoken something, we'll give you another chance later.
The first question is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhu. And he asks, bhakti and contaminated consciousness from Lord Kapila. My question is, contaminated consciousness does get purified by the power of bhakti, like contaminated water by the sun without affecting the sun?
Yes.
The next question. Oh, he, Uttama Bhakta Prabhu has a follow-up, which is the bhakti process black and white?
No. There's modes of nature. Bhakti is black and white. The bhakti process has there's shades of gray. There's modes of nature, not gray. There are modes of nature influencing consciousness and thus influencing the bhakti process, while bhakti itself is pure. Okay?
The next question is from Sanchari Mataji, and she asks, are there any examples or instances in Krishna's pastimes where devotees fall into overthinking? Examples to help us in our own moments that we can use to guide our mind away from those hurdles.
Well, we read something just yesterday morning and again this morning about Kamsa. He was overthinking. So this question that you are raising, I can't remember who was it that was raising, asking some elaboration on, your question. What's planning and overplanning? That was something like what your question was. So Sanchari can listen to that discussion because we spent some time on it. And just listen to the recording again, and maybe you could write down what you understood and send it to Sanchari. give you a little homework exercise. You can check with mom and dad, make sure you've got all the pieces. Okay, it's an important question. Okay.
The next question is from Shashireka Devidasi Mataji, and she asks, in my understanding, bhakti is pure, but mixed bhakti is not pure, but it guides us towards pure devotion. I think, that's...
She's seeking verification. I'd like to edit that a little bit. It's not that mixed bhakti guides us to pure bhakti. I think I know what you mean. It's just a stage to get there, but what guides you is Krishna and the disciplic succession from Krishna, his dear representatives. That's what guides us to pure bhakti in the scripture. So, the rest seems okay. I mean, our we're influenced by the modes of nature, regrettably, but, you know, pretty strongly. And so, we can't just throw them away, because it's not in our power to throw them away. It's in Krishna's power. So Krishna can take them away, the modes. So we have to live according to our capacity. And we offer that with regret that it's mixed to Krishna and appeal to Krishna for his mercy to free us from those lower modes. So Shuddha Bhakti emerges. You know, it's a little bit like your question. A little bit. Okay.
I mean, I think you just answered this, but she just posted a correction to her earlier question.
Okay, that's okay. Next?
That is it for now, for online.
Okay, anything else in the room? Okay, good.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. It's regarding like what you spoke today. Like it's regarding the, you know, when Brahma kidnaps the cowherd boys, Krishna still became, he expanded himself and he became the sons of the mothers. So I was wondering, and even he became the calves, right, Maharaj?
Yes.
Okay, so how lucky, how fortunate those cows are.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Moo.
and how fortunate those mothers are. So did they do any austerity in order to obtain that 1 year Krishna's?
They were already in Krishna's pastimes. So to be in Krishna's pastimes, what's your eligibility to be in Krishna's pastimes? They're Shuddha Bhaktas. That answer your question? But let's go back to something we were discussing, chapter 35 in the morning. And that 35 is the gopis, it's the song of the gopis. It's the appreciating their mood of separation from Krishna, and Krishna's going into the forest, and the stages when he's just leaving into the forest at the edge of Braja, and he's playing his flute, and he's calling the cows. That's the scene. And then it's how that flute song affects. So the short is, all the living entities in Braja, they're pure devotees. There's no mixed devotees out there. But some of them are in different moods. And some are Shanta Bhaktas. And even the Shanta Bhaktas are moved to ecstasy. And they exhibit symptoms of ecstasy, although they're Shanta Bhaktas. So, to be in Vrindavan, like Brahmas, praying, Uddhava praying, take birth in Braja, to get the dust from the feet of the residents of Braja. So, you know, that's a lot of humility. I want to be a blade of grass. Or whatever. Shuddha bhakti. Inspired by those who have it. Inspired by the residents. So that's our position. We're not Brahma, we're not Uddhava, we're little people. But to be inspired by these most out of sight devotees. This is moving from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. You understand the distinction? Should I say it? We're following rules and regulations. We're the Dasya Bhaktas that's being spoken about in that verse 11 of chapter 12. By hearing about the associates of Krishna in Braja, it's drawing our attention to that stage of love, to revere and hold in great exaltation these devotees. And the term in Rupa Goswami's writing is ragatmika. They're perfected souls. They're not becoming anything. They're perfected souls. Eternal associates of Krishna in this mood of Raja. And to revere them and to aspire to be recipients of their mercy. That's the beginning of this Raghunuga bhakti. So we don't just like pretend it or imitate it or anything like that, but it starts to awaken. And it awakens through sound. There are people that don't hear it. There are people that, there are scholars that read it and they interpret it. And they do all kinds of not nice things. But so by hearing in the proper mood, in the proper manner, and et cetera, that's how we're being invited into Goloka Vrindavan. And you know, neglect our cooking in the kitchen and our deity worship and keeping the house clean and our duties. We do all those things. And the mind goes to, see, in its gradual evolving awakening. And that's their qualification. They're there. That's this Kritta Punya Punja phrase. But it's not piety, planting trees and digging wells. It's volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of loving service, selfless loving service, with nothing else in mind than Krishna's pleasure. Okay. Yeah.
Maharaj, you said that Narayana worshippers, they can't attain the same position of Vrajavasis because they worship the Lord in awe and reverence, and that covers like their bhakti.
No, it doesn't cover their bhakti. It covers the sense of intimacy. It doesn't cover their bhakti. They're Shuddha Bhaktas.
And then you also said that because of association with devotees, they can attain that like firm devotion. So can Narayana...
Can you move your mask? Because it's like your voice is muffled. Thank you.
So, through the association of devotees, you can attain that firm devotion. So can Narayana worshippers, can they also attain that firm devotion like through association?
Yes. Yes. But the association with, the nice story that's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. when Lord Chaitanya is having a discussion with the chief priest about the goddess of fortune wanting to enter the rasa dance. You know that story? Oh, it's a very nice story. Now I think you want to go back and read it, maybe tomorrow, because it's Sunday. So, Lord Chaitanya spent 4 months in the home of the chief priest of the Sri Rangam temple. Correct? Okay. So, because they're very exalted Vaishnavas, Lord Chaitanya and the father would have regular discussions on spiritual topics. So one day, Lord Chaitanya asked, "The goddess of fortune is supremely chaste to Narayan. Could you explain why she wanted to leave the lotus feet of Narayan and enter into Krishna's rasa dance?" And he said, "No problem, because Krishna and Narayan, they're the same. There's no unchastity on her part." Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Very well, but she, goddess of fortune, underwent austerities for long years, 100 years, something, and still wasn't allowed to enter into the rasa dance. Can you explain, if they're the same, why she couldn't enter the rasa dance? And why, even with austerities, the goddess of fortune? Come on. Austerities?" And he said, I don't know, but I think you know." And so the short answer is, her mood was the goddess of fortune mood. And the all-opulent Narayan. And that's not the mood of rasa dance. It's not by austerities or being very exalted in Aishwarya Bhav. It's getting the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan. That's how. It's because that the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, and all the residents of Vrindavan, not only the gopis, have this very, 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 very exalted intimacy, and that Madhurya isn't achieved by Aishwarya. It's achieved by association of those that have Madhurya. And then he went back and kind of made it nice. He said, "Oh, but anyway." Does that address your question?
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj.
There's a sweetness that those who like this Kritapunya Punja verse, there's three, and then there's the fourth. The coward boys are in the out of sight position. And then there are those that are gyanis that worship Brahman, and they have the happiness of realization of Brahma-bhuta. Mataji? They have Brahma-bhuta realization. And that's nice. And then there's those that are dasya-bhaktas, and they have a happiness of the worship of the Supreme Lord. And then there's materialists, they see Krishna as ordinary. But then there's this other position. And they're like Mother Jasoda, beyond the Vedas. They're playing. And look at what they do when they play. It's like really creative. They're not just like little boys, they're super little boys. But he's the Supreme Lord. And he loves it. And they love him. And they don't want to do anything else. So that's how one becomes so fortunate, is the hearing about and associating through sound with such personalities. That's what the 10th canto is doing. And that's how we associate through sound. And then our acharyas that have that mood, and the mood comes out through their commentaries. They're explaining things in very reasonable, logical manner, but it's not just reason and logic, it's ecstasy. They're in ecstasy. That's why they do so much of it, because it's ecstasy. And they're sharing their ecstasies. They're so kind. And we're so fortunate. Okay. How about next to you? Anything?
No.
Okay. online, anything? Oh, okay, we're done. Any gentlemen? Okay, yes, you have something.
A few classes ago, you're talking about taking like our daily activities or different skills we have and then curving them towards Krishna.
Dovetail, yeah.
Yeah. And there are some activities, like watching a movie where it's much more difficult to do that. I mean. When I was younger, my dad would tell me if I was like watching something, he would just tell me to like invite my my DTs to watch with me.
That's parenting 201.
But obviously, like that's
not a family secret, is it? Go ahead.
But like, obviously, that's not the same as, say, you can sing and then using that in kirtan.
Yes, it's not the same.
So,
where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
Well, there's a wonderful. Of the 18,000 wonderful verses, there's one wonderful verse in Uddhava Gita where Krishna speaks about this. He speaks about pure bhakti, and then he, you know, speaks about those that are not at the level of pure bhakti. They don't have envy of pure bhakti. They just recognize they're not there yet. And so recognizing that they're not there yet, they don't imitate, they cultivate, and while they're in the cultivating position, they're acknowledging that these activities that are not for the pleasure of Krishna, they're miserable, they're going to bring me misery, and you know, I regret it. And I'm praying to Krishna all the while to come to the unmixed devotion standard. So it's not exactly, you know, you can dovetail XYZ things in Krishna service. And then what do you do with those XYZ things that you cannot, but there is affinity for them? The simple principle is you regulate. It's not like you offer, but you just regulate. You know, Prabhupada would tell the devotees, you know, the young people that were coming at 22nd Avenue, they're addicted to cigarettes. Smoke one in the evening, one in the morning. And who wants to smoke one in the morning anyways? But the idea was regulation. So, but it's not the same as dovetail. It's, you know, it's a different principle that I just described. It's a really nice verse, really nice purport, an important verse. And, you'll remind me to send him the verse. Anything?
From, I believe it is Hariswari Prabhu's diary, Transcendental Diary. There he mentions Prabhupada watching Charlie Chaplin movie in the plane and then enjoying it and talking about it and laughing and everything. So can you please help us understand?
Transcendental. I mean, you could say what it wasn't. What it wasn't was indulgence in sense gratification. My understanding of some portion of what Prabhupada did is Prabhupada studied his audience. He would say it sometimes, you know, how do they dress? How do they conduct themselves? His purpose was to see that. And then understanding that, know how to address his audience in a, you know, in an effective, relatable way. Now he still didn't change his high position, he just calibrated how he presented things according to his audience. So it could have been one of those. You know, what's the humor of you know, the American audience? I mean, just something I'm thinking of as responding to your question. For a number of years, the Bhaktivedanta players from the UK were invited to come to New York for Rath Yatra. And for a whole week, every night they had some drama. And they're really into it, really into it. But some of their dramas were comedies. And British humor is really different. I couldn't get into it. I remember getting up and walking out because I like, you know, it's a very different, it's a wry kind of, it's not exactly sarcasm, it's just very different. But you know, they love it. You know, if you're British, you love it, I guess. So, you know, it gave a sense of, for me, it gave a sense of this is, you know, a cultural nuance of people from Britain. And they like things this way, and they like things that way. So perhaps it was one of those, just seeing, you know, his audience, not like, you know, watching cartoons or something for mind-numbing entertainment or comedy for getting rid of the boredom of the long plane flight or something. Srila Prabhupada ki.